This is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks, and this show is called The People Behind the PhDs. This is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks, and welcome to part two of the interview with Dr. Tariq S. Bel-Bahar, who studies altered states of consciousness and cognitive affective processes at the New York State Psychiatric Institute in the Washington Heights neighborhood of Manhattan, New York City. There's a few seconds of overlap, so we can pick up right where we left off in The People Behind the PhDs.
Kind of a gold standard measure of having success in life or kind of across the board or something like that. It doesn't necessarily correlate with happiness or income, even though, of course, there's research that suggests at least some collegiate work is better than none.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, so I just, as a general caveat, I don't want to come from a point of view of where I think I've been successful. I actually don't think so. Like, the dream, I haven't achieved the dream of having my own research lab, of having plenty of first author research articles, of having scientific recognition. And, you know, maybe it certainly is the case that many are called and few are chosen. But I think it's more like many are called, but few are funded.
Okay. Yeah, well, that and, seems to ring true, yeah. Very much.
And we can talk more about various trends that have happened over the last 20 years since I first got into psychological research. There's some things that I would have done differently. But essentially, just so we kind of cut to the chase for folks who are just looking for some pragmatic suggestions, just at this point, we can touch on these points again later. Try to do things short and sweet. That means get through your program quickly and do the basics that are required. Try to connect and network with scientists who can be your mentors and kind of steer you to great opportunities, and kind of be in the game because you kind of love something about that aspect of research. In my case, some aspects of psychology, but for, I think, anyone working on a doctorate, thinking about it, having some kind of personal motivation that would push you through the arc of going through undergrad and graduate school and postdoc work. It's important to examine that personal motivation and for it to really be like a burning fire or desire to kind of learn something or change something or help some group of folks. Success is service in various ways.
So you're pretty humble about your story, but I think your story is super fascinating. And so before we go back, so thanks for sharing that. But before we go to the research, can we go to you mentioned before that you started at Hunter College, your undergraduate studies. What kind of things did you study at Hunter College?
Well, I mean, there was just basically like liberal arts type stuff. So art classes, history classes, anthropology, literature, art making, advanced anthropology with like a lab. And I also tried out things that didn't seem to work, like chemistry or like advanced coding or something like that, or music, things related to music. So I just kind of tested the waters and really liked this kind of curriculum. And later on, when I was in Kodiak, I just continued that at a community college before eventually going to Anchorage for a bachelor's in psychology. And there it was just a lot more literature and art and biology classes, kind of just exploring and learning.
Okay, so you started at Hunter. You took some classes for a couple of years, it sounds like, off and on, or how long were you taking classes at Hunter?
Yeah, maybe for like a year and a half.
Okay, and then at some point you applied to, was it University of Anchorage? Where did you go to school in Alaska?
In Kodiak, which is where I moved to kind of live with my mom, who no longer lived in the city.
Oh, wow. So where, for people who don't know Alaska, where's Kodiak, Alaska?
Well, just imagine a place like Manhattan, but three times as big and on the other side of the continent in the north. And then imagine that it has like a hundredth or a thousandth of the amount of people, maybe 10 to 15,000 max. And there's, anyway, and it's basically in Alaska. It's an island on the other side of time and space from New York City.
Wow. And it's a long way from Algeria and a long way from Poland as well.
Yeah, but a lot like Poland to some degree. And that was interesting.
So you went to then Kodiak, Alaska. Which university was in Kodiak, Alaska? Or which is it?
Just like the local community college.
Oh, just a local community college. Okay, I didn't understand that before. So you studied at a local community college.
I guess they were like a branch of University of Alaska. And I just transferred those credits and went on to do the bachelor's work in Anchorage.
Okay.
And it was actually in Anchorage that I got the kind of experimentalism bug. By running some large experiments with my college buddies that served as our senior theses, and a couple hundred participants using a so-called implicit method to measure or assess personality traits. Since then, it's been like debunked and modified in so many different ways. So yeah, that's another thing. Like to add to the takeaways, something you might work on or believe in will get debunked. And you know, in light of the current replication crisis, it's likely that something that you're working on may already have been should have been debunked. And that's not to be pessimistic in any way. It's just to be like, girdle yourself. There's science is about having ideas and then throwing out a lot of them after testing them out, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that things aren't necessarily geared or set up to make that kind of behavior rewarded, but, the essence of it is having questions and being okay with those questions not being the correct ones.
Can you share for people who don't know, what is the replication crisis that you mentioned?
Sure. I my understanding is that it's basically a kind of crisis in the reliability of findings, in the reality of findings that have been accepted to be real or real enough in the psychological sciences as well as other sciences. And I think also medical and other.
So you're referring to that. So one researcher does an experiment with whatever methodology, and not enough people have repeated that methodology to make sure the results found by the first researcher carry over to the second one. And since there's not many of those second lines of research to confirm the first one, is that what you're talking about when in replication crisis? Is that what you're referring to?
That's part of the story there.
Okay.
I mean, there's also like an open science aspect to this where people should share data more, should have better practices with their hypotheses and their data methods. Data analysis methods, but it does essentially have to do with the replicability of a particular finding by just on further observation by same group or different groups. And really, you know, here's some other takeaways, if you don't mind, and you can put them at the end if you want, or cut them out. let's see.
Stories. Stories are humanity's original technology, so I'm proud to carry on the traditional technology and share this story with you. Whether you're on an iPhone or an Android, whether you're on Apple, Spotify, or another podcast service, whether you're at home, in your car, at work, on public transportation, working out, or just walking around, I dedicate my shows to you. Dr. Z Productions and Podcasts, Consequential Stories for Life.
One is that basically there's probably hundreds of years of work more to do in the psychological sciences and the brain sciences. So the long view is important, and to understand that we're not like physics that has been around for at least centuries, but there's also a lot more experiments and knowledge to kind of explore and analyze and theorize about that will keep us busy for centuries.
That's good. So it's job security if you're willing to be flexible about what a job means.
Yeah, ideally federal funding would be kind of diverted to the psychological sciences so that, you know, instead of trying to go to Mars, we could do like moonshots into human behavior and human health. But just one step at a time. Like I recently read about a kind of a hadron collider for psychological scientists.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I guess some kind of open source data testing framework where they would also do some kind of advanced, maybe big data testing. I'm not sure, but it just was something about accelerating group science at a broader level, and at a more meaningful level, perhaps.
Absolutely.
Brain initiatives, both in the EU and the US, also come to mind. Recent brain initiatives.
So all of your, but you got your initial start, your fascination with research, at University of Alaska Anchorage during your senior year. What was the research on? It was a psychological experiment. Was it behavioral?
Right. Well, there was a cool professor there who always walked around with smiles, seemed kind of busy. I signed up as a research assistant with him for a semester and kind of liked running his little experiments, reading words on a computer screen and kind of like a cognitive semantic activation kind of study. And around the same time, the implicit association test had just come out from Greenwald at the University of Washington, and it's been used now for like 20 years, and some people already think it's a shizzle. me and my friends, we just kind of started talking about doing an experiment where we collected our own data from participants at computers while they did these tests that used the implicit association test with personality words, where at the time it wasn't being used for that. Since then, it's kind of like a mini industry. This in like 1998. And it was basically just by collecting from a couple hundred people over a couple of weekends, and then we kind of mined that data and presented on it and got our thesis leads out on it. It was meant to become an article. Generally speaking, if I had published that article and then got into the practice of publishing more articles, I kind of would have had a more successful kind of normal academic trajectory, leading up to, let's say, a professorship and research lab. But in my case, I just got interested in other projects and started working on those. And that's been kind of like my modus operandi, is just, especially I really like setting up and organizing projects. That's kind of like the heart of the experiment. And that's where you kind of pick up the data in the right way.
Yeah, so the very creative phase of this is organizing, thinking through the questions and how you're going to execute on them. You like doing all that kind of work on the front end, it sounds like. And so that's why you lead
exactly.
to it. Yeah, that's where you go. So you were at University of Alaska Anchorage. You did this cognitive semantics. So for people who don't know, cognitive is basically like psychology. Semantic is meaning. So basically a psychology and meaning experiment. You did it. You eventually finished University of Alaska Anchorage. What did you do after that? Because it sounds like you've probably traveled a lot subsequently. What was your next destination?
Right. I'll come back to it, but one project that I worked on in my first kind of psychology research methods class as an undergraduate was something to do with length of yoga practice and mental health effects. I tried to send out a national survey about that. And since then, I've always tried to do some kind of work related to yoga or meditation, and successfully and unsuccessfully. After Anchorage, basically that kind of personality testing experiment connected with my general interest in personality theories in psychology. I mean, basically, maybe I'm somewhat of an odd duck, but I try to read through like all the psychology books in the library. Even then, just like when I was a kid, I would often come back with like 20, 30, 40 books to scan through over a weekend or two. And just getting familiar with all kinds of psychological theories and getting kind of ready for grad school, essentially. So I felt really in love with psychology. And kind of grew out of a more deeper interest in yoga and meditation and spirituality, some things related to my family and the choices that they made. Like my mom's a pretty spiritual person, but it always seemed like at least psychological science was maybe on a firm footing in terms of an analysis or an examination of the mind in action, of behavior, human behavior, and individual differences, and cool things like emotion regulation. So it seemed like psychology was a place where, oh, well, I could study people and myself, and it's pretty interesting, and it seems like one can have a career in this kind of work. So that's what kind of motivated me to get to grad school. And one of the things I did was I traveled a little bit visiting different grad schools. So basically did a road trip kind of up and down the West Coast and visited with people at Berkeley, at UC Irvine, at Arizona, and some other places. And the whole process of applying to grad school was pretty interesting too for me, because it really meant like fleshing out what was important, what I thought I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to apply to some of the best schools like NYU and I think Stanford and UW, but eventually I chose Oregon because it seemed like a kind of a wonderful kind of hobbit-like kind of village space to live in.
So you could go to the library on the weekends, get 25 books, read them all, and go back. So you wanted...
Oh, yeah, that's the perfect for that.
Okay. So you wanted that, which you had done in New York City and in Alaska.
Yeah.
Okay. So is that where you? So eventually,
at least Oregon was somewhat different.
So I just want to make sure we have the trajectory right. You finished the University of Alaska Anchorage. You traveled up and down the West Coast,
sure,
visiting different schools, and trying to figure out for yourself what was the most important through the process of visiting these schools. And you got yourself into the University of, or you were accepted to different places, but in the end you chose the University of Oregon as your PhD program. Is that correct?
That's right. That's
okay,
right.
Got it. I want to make sure we're okay with the timeline of the story. So
yeah.
Then now you're at Oregon, starting your PhD. Thanks for listening to part two of the interview with Dr. Tariq S. Bell-Bahar, who investigates brain dynamics and the neuropsychology of mystical experiences. To continue listening, visit drz.net. That's dr-z.net. You can also follow me on Facebook at Dr. Z Podcasts and Instagram at drznet. As always, happy deciding. The People Behind the PhDs is conceived, written, produced, and edited by Dr. Z, that's me, Zachary Brooks, PhD, in Dr. Z Productions and Podcasts. Learn more at drz.net/about. That's dr-z.net/about.